Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Goal to go, third down and five for the Chiefs. Trailing 10-7, Mahomes raises the right leg. Pass caught near side, touchdown, Kansas City on a quick slant. Patrick Mahomes to Travis Kelce for the 52nd time. That is third in National Football League history. Quarterback to a tight end.
Well, and just like that, everybody, the Chiefs remain the only undefeated team in the National Football League. Welcome in. Happy Monday. It's a Reaction Monday here on Sports Daily. I'm Tommy Kester, Paul Savage in for Jacob Albrecht, Jad Chambers in the producer chair this morning, manning that IHOP hotline, which you can connect with us anytime at 869-1240. Glad to have you here on the program today. Paul, welcome in. How was your weekend?
It was great. A lot of football. Had a lot of fun. Lost a game on Friday night we shouldn't have lost it with the East High Blue Aces versus the Dodge City Demons. Congratulations to them, Tommy, by the way. Congratulations to Dodge City. But been a fun weekend. But, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs, that was fun to watch last night. That was pretty good. By the way, you know, you're always talking about tight ends. This is a record. I mean, we're the third most touchdowns between Mahomes and a tight end. Do you realize where, this is so funny, but where was Travis Kelce lined up in that formation? He was the outside receiver of a trip set. That's practically as far away from the tight end position as you could possibly be. Outside receiver. That means he's the closest to the sideline.
Right.
So I always get a kick out of that. We have never considered, at least I don't know, I don't think I have. Do you consider Travis Kelce a tight end? Because I consider him more of a utilitarian type player that can be used, and what we've counted up, what, 6-7 positions?
Yeah, so, I mean, he does everything, and he always has. I mean, he's so versatile.
Yeah.
And you know, that's really kind of redefining the tight end role in the NFL.
There's no question.
It was a big day yesterday for tight ends. George Kittle had a milestone game for the 49ers in primetime last night as they beat the Cowboys. We'll get into that in hour two. We'll do a recap and a reaction of everything that happened in the NFL in hour number two. Also, a look around college football. We'll do that in our second hour as well. World Series Game 3. Shocker basketball, their exhibition game last night against Emporia State. They looked good. We'll hopefully have time to talk a little bit about that as well in our second hour. Hour number one, here's the plan today, Paul. We're going to spend a lot of time on the Sunflower Showdown. In fact, in our next segment, Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, will join us in just about 10 minutes from now, at about 9:15 or so, to recap and talk about a really exciting Sunflower Showdown.
Good.
As Kansas State beats Kansas in Manhattan by 2 points. So we'll talk with Wyatt and then spend some time on that later on in the hour. But let's get things started with the Chiefs. And
we'll
revisit the Chiefs in hour two as we kick off the 10 o'clock hour a little bit later on in the program. But really quick, top-level view of the Chiefs. For me, yesterday, watching that game against the Raiders, Paul, it was so much of what we've come to expect from Kansas City. Like, really, it was sort of, I feel like, their season so far in a nutshell was really summed up, I feel like, in that game. It wasn't a phenomenal game offensively, although Patrick Mahomes had a pretty good game. He did throw an interception, which we've kind of come to expect from him. So that was one thing that we've seen happen throughout the season. He did that. The running game, I think, while it was slow going early on, kind of turned up a little bit. Kareem Hunt, of course, got into the end zone. But really, Paul, defensively for Kansas City, it was another phenomenal game for the Chiefs. I mean, they really shut down the run. And they've been doing that all season long with Alexander Mattison. They had a massive goal line stand defensively that I think ultimately won them the game. And again, it's a lot of what we've come to expect from Kansas City.
Yeah, you just nailed it. Shut down the run.
Yeah.
90%, I think I can safely say 90% of the time a football team shuts down the run on their opposition for the day, they're going to win that football game. Las Vegas had 33 yards rushing. Total for a team.
Right.
33 yards. You know something? That's hard to overcome, particularly when I almost feel Gardner Minshew. I almost feel sorry for him in a way because a lot is being thrust upon him when you can't run the football. You can't run the football. Worse than that, the opposition knows you can't run the football, and so they brought a lot of heat. They were coming and coming, and it was really interesting to watch how that worked out. But you're right, the ability of the Chiefs to be able to shut down the run is almost growing week by week. At least it seems like to me. I can't really prove it. I guess we could, but teams are different, so it's hard to. I mean, for instance, Detroit's going to run the football better than the Raiders ran the football if you play just as an example. But with that being said, it was a great effort defensively, and defense is really. I give them the credit for this win. They did a great job shutting down the run and allowing those big crazy guys up front to go wild, do some things. Did you notice how they widened their stances after about two quarters? They were roaring back, and they were just coming off the line and going to get him.
Yeah, and as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, in my mind it was a microcosm of everything that we've seen so far from Kansas City, both the good and the bad, really, I think, came to bear in the game yesterday.
What do you mean bad?
Obviously, a left tackle continues to be an issue.
Oh, I got you. I see what you mean. Yeah.
Max Crosby.
And it did. And it was a problem.
You have back-to-back weeks for Kansas City where you're going up against Nick Bosa and Max Crosby, of the best.
Good luck on that one.
Edge rushers in the National Football League. So that obviously played into it. But I think that I don't want to put words in your mouth, Paul, but left tackle, I think, has become a major issue where before it really wasn't that I was overly concerned. I just thought, okay, like it's going to be mediocre, but it'll be manageable. It'll be serviceable. It wasn't serviceable yesterday. That was an issue. I think cornerback, the secondary, they're getting a little bit more thin as that goes on. So defensively, that's something that I would look at as well. But then really, outside of what the defense was really able to do, stopping the run, bending, not breaking, all of that, if you take away, and I tweeted this yesterday during the game, if you take away Steve Spagnuolo and the Chiefs' defense, this team is pretty weak, right? Like, if you take away the defense, the defense has been outstanding. They've been one of the best defenses in the NFL. Spagnuolo is one of the best, if not the best, defensive coordinators. But really, like, take that away. They're probably a middle of the road team. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness they have that defense because it showed up when it needed to the most. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think, won the game for Kansas City.
I'll go out on a line. I'll say where they're at, where they would be if that was the case, as you just described. Chiefs are 7-0 right now. In the case that you described, they're 3-4. That's where maybe 2-5. They could be 2-5 in that scenario. You're exactly right. You take that away, this is a different team. Because even though you've got the best football player in the entire NFL in Patrick Mahomes, they're not exactly lightening it up. They're not lightening it up at all. I mean, they're serviceable. They're doing enough to win. 27 points is reasonable. Come on, you got Patrick Mahomes and Kelvin and Travis Kelce. Come on now. You got the best player in the NFL.
Yeah.
You ought to be lightening up the scoreboard a little bit more, don't you think?
Well, and thank goodness that Travis Kelce has started to come alive the last couple of weeks. That's been really, really good.
You said by design, I think, a week or two ago. Was that you or was that Jacob?
I mean, I think that he's coming along for sure.
Okay.
Where, really they didn't need to lean on him quite as much and still win. Now they need to for sure. And they did, and he delivered.
Got it.
That's a pretty big tease, into hour number two, because we're going to have a lot more on the Chiefs as we go through the program today. We'll talk about the good, the bad, and the fact that the Chiefs remain the only undefeated team in the NFL with their victory in Vegas yesterday. Coming up after the break, Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, will join us. A lot to get to with the Sunflower Showdown, Kansas State and Kansas. We will get into all of that coming up on the other side. Of course, as I mentioned, the IHOP hotline is open at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP. Celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP house faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats, joins us next on Sports Daily.
Your new radio home for K-State Athletics, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. It's that time, Sports Daily, getting all the inside information on Kansas State. Let's go now to the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson.
And welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily here on this Reaction Monday, joined now by the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson. An extremely entertaining Sunflower Showdown as the Wildcats get the two-point victory in Manhattan on Saturday night, 29-27. Wyatt, good morning. Have you gotten some rest after that big game Saturday night?
I would say enough. Yeah. Yes and no.
Just enough.
How about that for an answer?
Yeah,
huh?
Just enough. It was
good to be on with you guys. That was a terrific football game and a really great win for K-State. Excited for them.
It absolutely was. And I want to get your top level view on this first before you really dig in. It was back and forth, obviously, and that's what you want from a rivalry game. Of course, the Wildcats able to extend their winning streak to 16 games against the Jayhawks, but it was different than a lot of these other matchups that we've seen over the course of the last decade and a half, Wyatt. And I think that last year's game and this year's game, I mean, it just shows how close this rivalry has gotten, and just it ultimately ended up a battle back and forth, and really, I think, came down to which team made fewer mistakes, and that was obviously Kansas State.
Yeah, I think a couple of thoughts there, to be honest with you, Tommy. I think one is that K-State is pretty darn good at finding ways to win games, and it's been a little bit more of a struggle for KU. But I do think the last 2 years, and you're accurate there, shows you what kind of job Lance Leipold has done at Kansas. I don't think there's any question that they've closed the gap. I felt like, and I don't see them every week, but this is my thought. I thought Jalen Daniels played his best game this year, and I frankly don't think it was all that close. I know he was really good, you know, last week against Houston, but I thought he really, really brought it. They ran the ball well, and when they run the ball, they become exceptionally dangerous, and it was a challenge. Just kind of updating my charts here. They had 401 yards in total offense. K-State had a little bit more than that, but you kind of get the idea. I mean, when you get right down to it, I think mistakes is probably the difference, really.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would agree with that, Wyatt. And going back to what you had mentioned as far as the yards gained by both teams, and I think we had talked about it last week leading into the Sunflower Showdown, that the Wildcats really had this opportunity to pound the ball on the ground with that three-headed monster between Giddens and Edwards and, of course, Avery Johnson. All three of them did that. Dylan didn't touch the ball a whole lot offensively, but when he did, he made the most of it. And then, of course, DJ Giddens had over 100 yards on the ground. That ultimately, I think from an offensive point of view, certainly seemed to be, you know, sort of the game changer, the difference maker, I guess, for the Wildcats.
Yeah, you know, they've made their hay this year running the football. There's no question about that. But it has been a little bit more difficult in the last couple of games, the game in Morgantown 2 weeks ago and in this game. I thought overall KU defended DJ very, very well, with probably the exception of the one long run. They did a good job. I think a lot of people probably would say, man, I wish Dylan would get a couple of two or three more carries here and there. And I kind of understand that. You know, it's just, he's been very productive when called upon, whether it's in the throw game or the run game. It's one thing that I will say that I don't think gets enough headlines here is how well K-State's offensive line plays consistently this year. They have not been perfect, but when you consider that they lost an All-American and three sixth-year guys, and you know they're putting up the numbers they are, and for the season and in conference play, they're almost better in some ways in conference play when you start to shake that down. Really gives you an opportunity with a very talented young quarterback and, you know, good backs and solid receivers. I'll say it that way.
You know, Wyatt, you bring up something that really makes me think to maybe next year even, and that is assuming that Jason Daniels come back, or Jalen Daniels comes back to KU. He's got another year. Avery Johnson's just a sophomore. Boy, the state of Kansas has got really two talented, athletic quarterbacks at their two major Big 12 schools. I think this is really something pretty cool. I like these two quarterbacks, but they're still a long ways away from being to that niche level in NCAA football, where we started kind of mentioning them in under our breath with about Heisman maybe or something like that. Long ways away. But what's the upside on the state of Kansas right now with what two of what I think are two quarterbacks with so much potential? It could just be nuts.
Well, I agree with all of that. I think really when you look at Ed Avery, and we've talked a lot about him on this show week in and week out, but I think we should be, you know. I mean, he's been very productive. He seems to be a little bit better each and every week. I love his approach and his work ethic. Everybody loves his skill set. And I don't see Jalen as often, you know, and in person as you know, others do. But I don't know how you look at him and don't just think, wow, that's an electric talent. Mm-hmm. Coach Kleiman told me this last week when we got together and visited about the game that the most underrated thing about him is his arm talent. I think you saw that on that touchdown or potential touchdown that was dropped in the end zone early in the game. Mm-hmm. Guys, that was like a 55, 60-yard throw. And pretty much right on the money. It takes a little bit of skill set to do that. He's a fabulous player from my perspective.
Wyatt, as I was watching the game on Saturday night and Avery Johnson does a quick post-game interview on the field after the game, he mentioned how offensively in the second half, things were not clicking the way that they were in the first half for Kansas State.
Right.
They still found a way to win, and really, for both teams, I mean, it got kind of sloppy, and it wasn't, you know, great football on either side, and really the mistakes sort of piled up and ultimately became the death of Kansas in this matchup, quite frankly. But with Johnson specifically and the way that he led this Kansas State offense, what was your big takeaway from him leading the team offensively when things weren't going well? It's easy to be a leader when things are going well and you're connecting with your wide receivers and all of that, but you faced some adversity in the second half, and that could have very well been partially due to adjustments that Kansas made defensively in the second half, or just things, you know, maybe weren't, you know, rolling at the same kind of efficiency that you're used to. How do you think Johnson responded to when things were not particularly going well in the second half?
Well, I think he responded very, very well for a true sophomore and a guy who's played, 15, 16 games in a career. Under that duress, I'll say, because I thought Kansas did a pretty good job defensively. They moved him around a little bit, made things hard. And he said to us on postgame two that he was asked about how well did he play, and he said, not as good as I wanted to. And I think that's partly why he gets better and better and better. He went into pretty complete detail there of what he could have been better at. And I just think that's how you get better. I heard a basketball coach many years ago say, a lot of guys, when they practice on their strengths, not their weaknesses, and it should be the other way around. And I think it's true. But this is a young guy that practices both, I believe. And I think he handled it under the circumstances really pretty well. You know, the completion numbers weren't quite as good, but when he had to make a play, a lot of times he did. And I think that's also true for K-State. I think what he would tell you, too, is that on a night where he could have been better, the defense in the second half probably saved K-State because they made some adjustments, too, and they were better, especially in the fourth quarter, they were better. KU's mistakes were part of that, no question. But it was an electric crowd, good football game. You couldn't ask for more. But I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. They're sitting there 7-1, and I don't know that they've played their best football game yet, and that excites me.
Yeah, I'm going to make a comment just and see if you agree with me, because I might be crazy on this one, but I looked at this game and I watched this game, and it was a close game all the way through, and I thought to myself, why is this game so close? And it hit me. You know, I've watched KU over the last few years. They have not been a physical football team, and I'm talking about offensive line, defensive line. But I'm thinking to myself, you know, KU's come a long way with physicality in the trenches. They played K-State pretty darn well. They matched them pretty darn well. KU was almost as physical, if not as physical, as Kansas State. To me, that might be the difference of why this was only a 2-point game. Your comments on the physicality of the University of Kansas, and does that give you pause as to think to yourself, well, maybe there's room for improvement on physicality with K-State at this point?
Well, I will say this. Doing this job day in and day out for, 23 football seasons now, when most people are asked about K-State, those coaches respond with the fact that they play very, very physical football, and they play exceptionally hard. They're always well prepared. Those types of things. I think that is still the case here. But I get your point. I made the point last week as often as I could that this is a Kansas team that you have to look at, that they're going to come in here and potentially play at their optimum level. Because don't kid yourself, that game meant a lot to them too.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you saw that in their play.
Yeah.
And they have become more physical. I look at their offensive line, and I thought they did a pretty good job against a solid, solid K-State front. But I have to be honest and tell you, too, I think they were better on the defensive front from a physicality standpoint, Paul, than I thought they might be. You look at their front, especially Taylor Withers, Robinson, Woodkey, those kind of guys, Tommy Dunn, those guys can play. They're good players. They've just had an odd season, really, from the standpoint of, you know, they've lost some really hard games that they probably could have won late. I mean, they're up 11 points with 4.5 minutes to go at West Virginia and got beat, and usually that doesn't happen. So they've not been perfect, but they're clearly better, and the physicality is in part why. Number six is really good, too. Number four is great. He's a pro, 100%. Don't you think?
I do.
Yeah.
Anybody who watches that guy run the football and doesn't think he's going to play at the next level is crazy.
Yeah,
absolutely. Wyatt Thompson, voice of the Wildcats, joining us here reacting to the Sunflower Showdown, where Kansas State extends their winning streak to 16 games over the Jayhawks. Wyatt, let's go to the defining final drive for Kansas in the Sunflower Showdown as they're trying to push the ball into field goal range to hopefully set up what would have been, had it worked out, a game-winning field goal for the Jayhawks. I don't know if I have seen a team blitz as much as Kansas State did defensively on that final drive. I mean, they sent the house over and over and over again on Jalen Daniels and the Kansas offense. And really, credit to Joe Klanderman, credit to the Wildcat defense for executing those blitzes so well. I was surprised, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. I was surprised that KU didn't really do anything to adjust to that on that final drive. It just sort of seemed like play after play after play, you just knew, everybody in the building knew, that Kansas State was going to bring the house, and the Jayhawks really didn't do anything to adjust from that. But again, credit to Klanderman and the defense for Kansas State for really executing that well.
Joe Klanderman's been around here a long, long time. He's been with Chris Klieman a long time. And I left the stadium thinking to myself, when was the last time with a game on the line that late in the game that we saw the K-State be that aggressive in the blitz game and bring the house, so to speak? That's kind of the old cliche way to say it, right? But that's exactly what they were doing, Tommy, right? There's no doubt about that. And I think it helped K-State win the game. I don't know if they don't play it that way, we'll never know, but I guess what I'm saying is you could make an argument, had they not done that and played a little bit more conservatively, KU may have gotten a field goal try. It may have been a 50-55 yarder, but they may have got there. I just thought it was great. I mean, hey, if you're going to go down swinging, boy, why not? It's like you got Bob Gibson on the mound. You're going to let him throw a curveball with that heater?
Yeah. Right.
Let it all hang out, right? Let it all hang out. It's, you know,
absolutely,
it's a rivalry game in the final drive. I mean, I think that honestly, from a play calling perspective, and you mentioned Joe Klanderman's been around for a long time. It's not his first rodeo. It's not his first Sunflower Showdown. But I'll tell you what, that took a lot of guts. I think it took a lot of guts defensively from a play calling perspective, because all it would have taken, well, maybe not all it would have taken, but Kansas could have set up a screen.
Sure.
They could have done a draw play. There were different things that they could have done to counter that, where it could have blown up that blitz, you know, caught the Wildcats on their heels a little bit. That didn't happen. So those were gutsy calls, I think, from the K-State defense.
Absolutely. And I think it's a risk-reward thing, right? I mean, there's going to be, when you do that, there is risk. There's no question about it. And I think that's what was so satisfying about it, if you're a K-State fan, because, you know, did you have any other choice other than to get after him? I mean, he was good enough that night that if you don't get in his face, he's probably going to make a play or two and put you in harm's way. simply stated.
You know,
I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Yeah.
You know, let me get to just a basic question right now regarding the Big 12, if you don't mind, Wyatt. You got four teams that right now look like they could be the champion of the Big 12 in Iowa State, BYU, K-State, and, of course, Colorado. Two of the teams sitting at 4-1, BYU and Iowa State sitting at 5-0 and 4-0, undefeated in the Big 12. One of those four teams is going to be a representative into the big dance. We know that. What do you think right now about the chances of two teams? You know, we're talking about two teams from the Big 12. Is this conference strong enough? Will they have enough pull to get two teams into the big dance?
I would like to think that the answer is definitely yes. I think when people look at the top of our league, you see very, very quality football teams, don't you?
I do.
I mean, I've said it all along. BYU has made a big step from their first year in the league from last year to this. And I think it isn't just Jake Retzlaff, who I think if you go back and look what he did a year ago in terms of results, win-lose, it wasn't very good. And now here they sit. I think Iowa State is a dynamite team, honestly. Some have argued that they haven't played the same kind of schedule K-State has played, and I believe that is so. I do. I think what will hurt is just the national perception, because you have so many talking heads that are so pro-SEC and Big Ten.
Yes, sir.
Does that influence the committee? It shouldn't, but sometimes it does. Mm-hmm. Name recognition is also important, much like it is in basketball. There's going to be, you know, I'm just going to be blunt about this. There's going to be some politics in it. It's just part of it. It's an imperfect system. But I do, to specifically answer your question, is the league good enough to get two out of 12? Of course they are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll see if that's the reality, though, once it all comes to bear. It's interesting, Wyatt, because, you know, week in and week out, it's really easy to talk about the stars. You know, it's really easy to talk about the Avery Johnsons and the DJ Giddens and, you know, some of these other players on this team. Just because they're lighting it up week after week and doing really remarkable things. Usually the only time that a kicker is brought up is when it's in a negative light or a negative connotation. But hats off to Chris Tennant. I mean, you know, hitting that ultimately game-winning field goal with a couple of minutes left in the game, that wasn't an easy field goal. It was a long field goal. And I know that, you know, you've obviously followed, you know, and called every game that Tennant has been with, but it hasn't always been sunshine and rainbows for Chris Tennant. So I think, I'm sure, obviously, that was such a positive moment for him to hit that game-winning field goal against your in-state rival. You know, hats off to him. That was clutch.
I'm really glad you brought that subject up, because I do think you can look at this 100 different ways. But the weekend for me, okay, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about how good my life is. Friday night, I emceed the pep rally after the parade. And one of the people I got to interview there was Darren Sproles. I don't know if you remember how many stars Darren Sproles had coming out of high school,
sure,
but it wasn't very many.
Right.
Right. Chris Tennant and what he has gone through here in growing into a really, really fine football player. And he mentioned it to us on air. He mentioned it to the media afterwards. K-State, he hasn't always been K-State's favorite guy. The fan base, I'm saying.
Yeah.
But he's just gotten better and better and better. And what resonated with me among probably above everything else is what Coach Klieman said during his presser, that in the last month, he has been superb in kicking the ball. And it's reality. I mean, that thing was right down the middle. And from my perspective, probably would have been good from 55, 56 yards. He smoked it.
You know,
good
when,
for him too.
You know, when you look at the schedule ahead, I mean, it's not like this is a cakewalk, I can tell you that right now. But when you look at the schedule ahead, there's going to be some games that kind of worry me, and I'm sure they worry you too. What's the one or two games that you can think can be a trap game? You know, it's one of those games where, you know, K-State will be favored. I know you got to think there's one game that's going to be a trap game. What's the one game that's got you worried just a little bit?
Well, I'll say that there are three games before K-State plays at Iowa State.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And I would say most everybody would say the most worrisome game could be Cincinnati. Even though they got beat in Boulder, they're much better. Good football team. But I'll say this. You better be worried about Houston. Defensively, they are really good. Offensively, they are pretty ordinary. Probably below average. But their football coach is dynamite. And he's been around. He knows Kansas State a little bit. He brought a Tulane team in here not all that long ago and beat K-State. He knows what K-State is all about. This will not be an easy game from my perspective. And if it is, I'll admit next week that I was wrong. These games on the road are hard. So I think the answer is Cincinnati under normal circumstances, but you'd better take some time and worry about this one too.
Yeah.
You know the one thing I think I agree with you on is Houston. That a little bit of fear? That's not bad. That's not all bad, because you know this is not the same Houston team as when this season started. This is a team that's starting to figure this out. They're now 2-3 in the conference. They're 3-5. I was at a point where I was wondering, will they win a game? Seriously, I was at a point in this season.
Who wasn't?
It's a
great point, because, I mean, they won at TCU. I don't know if you've noticed, but TCU's been a little bit better lately.
Yep.
And their quarterback, Hoover's been really, really good. Numbers that are rock solid. I mean, touchdowns to interceptions, his numbers are every bit as good as Avery's, right? So that was a pretty good win. And you can say what you want about Utah, but they beat Utah the other night.
They did.
Oh.
They beat them 17-14 on a kick with 4 seconds to go. But here's what people may have missed. They were inside the five twice and didn't score. They were the much better football team.
Yeah.
So if you're not worried about them, there's something wrong with you.
100%. And you know, and like you mentioned, Wyatt, I mean, going on the road to take on Willie Fritz, you know, is never an easy task, regardless of the talent level on the team. And I know that really the narrative with Houston this year has been give Fritz a little bit of time. He's rebuilding this program up, competing in the Big 12, all of that. And I wonder if that timeline has been moved up a little bit. He clearly doesn't have the horses, right, like that he would want for sure. The talent level just isn't, I'm sure, probably where he would want it to be overall, but he's getting the most out of them, at least he has, over the last several weeks. And like you mentioned, beating Utah at home on Saturday, that's a huge accomplishment for this Cougars team. The Wildcats head to Houston on Saturday. So I know that, you know, we had talked last week about Kansas State being on the road a lot before they got to play the Sunflower Showdown. They're right back on the road this weekend against Houston. And I kind of agree with you. I don't know if I would call it trappy necessarily, but this is a team that I think is playing better than what it shows on paper.
Without a doubt. And I don't think K-State will take them lightly. That's not the way Chris Klieman operates. You know, they're going to try to hone in and get ready to roll, because, you know, they're going to look at Houston way different than everybody else does, because I know how they think and operate, and they are going to know what Houston is defensively. And they may be talent void in some areas, but not so much on the defensive side. They've got dudes up front. They've got dudes in the middle and in the back. A.J. Halsey is one of the best secondary players in our league. There's no doubt about that. The question will be, can they do enough offensively? Because they've kind of alternated quarterbacks back and forth, and the Chris kid has kind of been the guy the last couple of weeks and seems to be settling in there. But they've got pieces. I'll also say this. If the quarterback plays well, they have a couple of two or three receivers that are pretty salty. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I know they'll take it quite seriously. 100%.
It's a 2:30 kickoff on Saturday in Houston for the Wildcats. What do you guys have planned for the broadcast?
Well, still kind of making some of those, to be honest with you, but we'll visit with Coach Klieman. We'll visit with the coordinators. And I'm not totally sure yet on the players, but one of the guys that I thought I might try to get a talk with this week is Cody Stufflebean, who's from McPherson, been here a long time, a sixth-year guy. Kind of what we were talking about, like with what K-State is, right? Not highly recruited. Hadn't even been a starter until this year, and look how well he's played. He's kind of the other guy with Brendan Mott. He doesn't get the headlines, but he's a dude. And so I'm anxious to see if I can get him cornered and visit with him for a few minutes. Great kid. Thrilled he came back for a sixth year. It's helped us a lot.
Well, it's going to be, of course, another fun game as the Wildcats continue to try to keep their not only Big 12 title hopes alive, but also potentially entry into the college football playoff. And it continues on Saturday on the road at Houston. Again, kickoff is at 2:30. All the coverage, of course, here locally will be on KFH. Wyatt, we appreciate your time as always, and we'll talk to you again on Saturday.
Tommy, Paul, good to talk to you as always. Thank you so much.
There goes Wyatt Thompson, voice of the Wildcats here on Sports Daily. Paul, we're going to take a quick timeout on the other side. Let's look at the Sunflower Showdown from the Kansas perspective. We've talked Kansas State.
All right.
Let's look at it from the Jayhawks. Nice. Are there any moral victories that you can look at? I don't know if you want to call it a moral victory, if you believe in that sort of thing, or if you feel like you let one get away. We'll discuss that on the other side. In hour number one on a Reaction Monday, it's Sports Daily. Tommy Caster, Paul Savage, Jad Chambers producing. We'll be right back. Our thanks to Wyatt Thompson joining us in the previous segment to talk Sunflower Showdown. The Wildcats beat the Jayhawks for the 16th year in a row, 29-27 in Manhattan on Saturday night. If you missed any of that interview and you want a reaction or a recap of the Sunflower Showdown, you can always go and listen to it on the free Odyssey app. We have that podcasted up for you so you can check out that interview and more reaction from the Sunflower Showdown. Paul, as we wrap up hour number one, we're going to get into the NFL and the Chiefs more in hour two. So let's put a bow on the Sunflower Showdown and look at things briefly from the Kansas perspective. And we'll have more on this as the week goes on with our KU insider, Sharias Latta. We'll talk about them and really how the game played out for the Jayhawks on Saturday night. But this was a game, Paul, where I think that Kansas, you have to lament all of the mistakes and the missed opportunities. For a good portion of that game, they were the better team. I think that's objective. I really do. I think that they played at least offensively better for the most part, but the mistakes killed them, the mental mistakes. The drop touchdown in the end zone by Quentin Skinner, the decision to take the ball out on a kickoff and get down at the one-yard line that resulted in a safety, a missed PAT after the Devin Neal touchdown, and then the fumbles from Jalen Daniels ultimately cost the Jayhawks the game. So I know I used the words moral victory before the break. I'm not sure that at this point in the season for the Jayhawks, you can even think about that. You're just thinking about the fact that really you let one get away.
Well, let me just expound on what you just said. I will even go a step further and say there were a couple of quarters in that football game that KU, I thought, was the better football team. But there were also a couple of quarters that K-State was a better football team. Yeah. So take your choice. But, I mean, that tells me that you're making progress, because there's been a day where we'd go, well, they didn't have any quarters where they were the better football team. And now we're starting to say that. I told you that before we went to break. Tommy, I've got a question for you with regards to the University of Kansas, because what we're talking on about what's being built for the University of Kansas hinges on, I think, very importantly, Jalen Daniels coming back. What are the chances he steps into the portal? What are the chances that he says, you know something, I've had enough here at the University of Kansas. I think I'm going to enter the portal, see what good I can get, see if there's a place I can get some NIL that's above and beyond what I'm getting here at the University of Kansas. What are the chances of him at this point, Tommy, or have you heard something?
No, I haven't heard anything, but I don't think it's going to be a scenario where NIL, from a money perspective, is the deciding factor for him, because I'm not sure that there's another team in college football that wants Jalen Daniels enough to pay him more than what he's currently making right now. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I think that if he were to leave Kansas and enter the portal or whatever, I think he would do it just simply because he wants a fresh start, you know, and it's been a disappointing season for Kansas and you know, probably something that he would look at. I don't want to say it's likely. I wouldn't be shocked if this is the last season that we see Jalen Daniels playing for Kansas. I really don't. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if that happened. But you know what? At the end of the day, for this particular team this season, there was not a moment, even when Kansas was leading the game late. I mean, they had a 1-point lead with 3 minutes left in the game. there was not a moment where I thought, yep, Kansas is going to win this game. In fact, I texted Jacob with about 4 minutes to go. Kansas was leading. They had the ball. And I texted him and I said, congratulations to Kansas State on winning this game. And he's like, what are you talking about? All they have to do is kick a field goal. Like, even coming, like, all they have to do, all Kansas has to do is hold on to the ball, run the clock out. Then even after Tennant hit the field goal, all they had to do was get into field goal range. I said, nope. I have seen this movie too many times from Kansas.
Tommy, that was horrible. I mean, come on, Tommy.
There was no, at that point, you've seen, this is a team that has led in every single game this season in the fourth quarter except for one. They're 2-6. They cannot close out games. They've shot themselves in the foot. They did it. They've done it multiple times this year. They've done it multiple times. So there was no hope at that point, even with Kansas having the ball and the lead with just a couple of minutes to go.
I didn't know K-State was going to win that football game with 4 minutes.
100%
I did not know.
100% thought they would. 100%. And I think all told, I think they had like 17 plays. They ran the ball. They had 17 plays with the ball with the lead midway through the fourth quarter. They ran the ball with Devin Neal like two or three times. You had the lead. You just need to run clock. Why are you not running the ball with Devin Neal more? He's one of the best running backs in the league.
I can't answer that.
There was really no point where I felt optimism that Kansas would actually be able to pull it out and win the game. And ultimately, Kansas State extends that streak to 16. It's been, I think you can call it, chalk it up to a lost season for the Jayhawks this year, which is unfortunate because this was the year with the expectations, with a ton of talent and veterans and all of that. It's disappointing, but hats off to Kansas State for keeping their postseason hopes alive as they continue on. And they're now 7-1, taking on Houston on the road this weekend. Kansas gets the week off to, I guess, regroup and try to figure out, is there a way they can get bowl eligible by winning out? That's what they're going to have to do, is win out, win four in a row. Easier said than done for the Jayhawks. That's going to wrap up hour number one, Paul. On the other side, we will get back into the NFL. The Chiefs beat the Raiders on the road 27-20, and a lot of other headlines from the NFL. We'll get into all of it next here on Sports Daily.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Kester.
It's a Reaction Monday on Sports Daily. I'm Tommy Kester, Paul Savage in for Jacob Albrock on this Monday. Jad Chambers in the producer chair. The IHOP hotline remains open now the rest of the way at 869-1240. A couple of different ways that you can also connect with us here on the program. Our video stream is live on the KFH Facebook, on the X page, on the YouTube page. Also, we're simulcasting on 12 News Connected Plus. You can leave your video comments right there on the screen. We can get to them as the program rolls on. And then also a really cool opportunity to leave us a voicemail of sorts on the free Odyssey app. You can download that, open it, search for KFH Radio, click the microphone button, record your message just like you're leaving a voicemail to somebody, and we'll be able to play that back on the air and react to it as well. So a few different ways that you can connect with the show. Speaking of the Odyssey app, the Wichita State Coaches Show on KFH and on the Odyssey app tonight, beginning at 6 o'clock with the Terry Nooner Show, followed by men's basketball coach Paul Mills, and wrapping up with volleyball coach Chris Lamb. It's all live on KFH, or you can simply download the Odyssey app and search for KFH. Congratulations, by the way, to Shocker Basketball, kicking off their season with that exhibition game last night in Coke Arena against Emporia State. Pretty dominant for the Shockers, and a lot of players looked really good. Kind of the first look at some of these newcomers for Wichita State, and so That's the one tune-up, Paul, before the Shockers get into the regular season, which kicks off in just about a week from now.
Really looking forward to it. Of course, there's a lot of guys we don't know who they are. I mean, that's always goes there's, but we also know who a bunch of these guys are. So it's kind of fascinating. I think it's probably a good mix between portal and keeping kids.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's not all cracked up to be what you want when you keep certain kids. But I we'll see. Time will tell. But I've got to be a little bit enthused off of this basketball. At least I think I am.
Yeah, and you know, I know that as we get closer to the kickoff to the regular season, we'll have more discussion and insight on Shocker basketball as we get ready to go for year number two of the Paul Mills era. As a reminder, you can catch all the Shocker basketball games on our sister station, 103.7 KEYN, the home of Shocker men's basketball. We're going to shift back into the NFL. We spent quite a bit of hour number one talking Sunflower Showdown, Kansas State and Kansas with Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats. Again, a reminder, you can listen to all of that discussion on the Odyssey app. But we did kick off the show, Paul, about an hour ago, talking Kansas City Chiefs. And, you know, it was one of those games where, honestly, it's a Chiefs team that they got the job done offensively. You saw a running touchdown from Kareem Hunt. You saw Travis Kelce getting involved. DeAndre Hopkins, brand new to the team, had a couple of catches. Really nothing spectacular, but I'm sure his role will continue to grow. Xavier Worthy got into the end zone. So it was there offensively for the most part. It's not super flashy, but again, that's what this team is. They're not going to go out and be high-flying and put up 40-plus points a game. They do what they need to do offensively. For the most part, limit the turnovers. Patrick Mahomes is throwing too many interceptions, but at the end of the day, the offense is doing what needs to be done to win these games.
Well, I think you're right. And we talked a little bit in the first half of this show, the first hour of this show, about the ability of the Kansas City Chiefs to stop the run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really and truly, 33 yards was all the yards of rushing that the Raiders had. You're going to win football games, Tommy, if you can hold the other team to running for 33 yards. That's not bad, and that's a good thing. That really bodes well. Oh, by the way, we haven't mentioned the fact that Patrick Mahomes threw a pass in this game, and I believe it was to DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
I believe it was to him for his 30,000th yard of offense for passing. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. And the fewest games in the history of the NFL. And I thought to myself, man, we're talking about some quarterbacks now. We're talking about some really good football players, and you're the fastest to ever get to 30,000 yards. And I think to myself, 100,000? Or is that what we're talking about? I always thought Brady might hit 100.
Yeah, I mean, that just shows the not only the prowess and the talent of Patrick Mahomes, but it just shows the consistency as well.
You know, I like the way you did that, you know, because I thought when I was going to say that, and I thought about that for a second, I thought you're going to roll your eyes at the 100,000 mark. I thought you're going to roll, like, sure, he's going to get 100,000 yards. Well, you know something, in today's football, you play long enough and you start young enough and you get all the playing time that he's been getting and all the chances, there's the shot. I'm telling you right now, there is a shot that Patrick Mahomes gets 100,000 yards before his last days are. Now, that's assuming he stays healthy, and that's assuming that he has good receivers around him for the rest of his career, which he will. This is the NFL. But I guess you didn't think that was that crazy of a remark after
all. No, I mean, of course it will. A lot of it will depend upon what the second half of Mahomes' career looks like.
Well, that's true.
As that moves forward.
And,
you know, I'm not a big believer with a team like the Chiefs that, you know, a lot of people want to talk about windows closing for certain teams, like championship windows, and before you have to then go and rebuild. I'm not a believer in that from a dynasty perspective. I think you reload, you retool, you don't necessarily rebuild,
right. And
it becomes a process over time. But, you know, eventually Travis Kelce is going to retire. You're going to have some other changes and that sort of thing as the years go on. So I just think that as long as the Chiefs can continue to retool as opposed to rebuild, then yeah, I don't think that's that ridiculous of a comment. I do want to ask you, though,
all right,
more specifically in the now, in the here and now, after this game, the Chiefs are 7-0, right? They're the only undefeated team remaining in the NFL. After watching what they did against the Raiders yesterday, do you think the Chiefs need to do anything else before the trade deadline? Do you think they need to try to find another acquisition in some capacity, or do you feel like you roll with the guys that you have and you feel good about it?
I think you roll with the guys that you have. They made the trade for a receiver, a quality receiver. By the way, a receiver that got a touchdown. No, I think you roll with the guys. I think you're fairly well there, aren't you? I think you are. I mean, your defense is sure playing well. I don't know what you'd want to do there. I mean, and the fact is, maybe you're thin here or there. At the NFL at this point of the football season, everybody's thin, Tommy.
Yeah.
Everybody is thin. That's just the way it works. But no, I think probably right now having signed a receiver, which is what we thought they would do, and they did it. No, I think you roll with what you got. I mean, you are 7-0. Granted, you could be 3-4 too.
Sure,
very easily.
Sure,
but you're not. You're 7-0.
I'm gonna throw out one name and one scenario that I feel like the Chiefs need to be aggressive. And this doesn't even necessarily have to correlate with the trade deadline, because this wouldn't be a trade necessarily. I've thrown out this name before. I'm going to throw it out again. It's not a huge needle mover, but Donovan Smith is still not signed. He's a free agent. He's still out there. The Chiefs could bring him in, and he knows the organization. He knows the offensive system. He played left tackle a year ago for this Kansas City Chiefs team. Is he a dominant left tackle in the NFL? No, he'd be on an NFL roster if he was. But we started the season at left tackle with Kingsley Suamataia. That did not work out well. He looks like a rookie, and he can still grow, and I think he will. I think he'll ultimately, at least I hope, fingers crossed, be the long-term solution at left tackle, but he looks like a rookie. So then they move him out. They bring Wanya Morris back in to start at left tackle. He's been in that position for the last few weeks. That hasn't worked well. Keep in mind, they have gone up against some pretty high-level edge rushers the last couple of weeks, but between Max Crosby being super disruptive yesterday defensively for the Raiders, the penalties that Morris, I mean, there was a drive, Paul, in the second half where I think Morris had back-to-back holding penalties. He wasn't able to make it work. He wasn't able to do what he needed to do to slow down the pass rush for the Raiders. The interior offensive line is really, really solid. Left tackle's an issue. Donovan Smith played that position a year ago for the Chiefs. If I'm Brett Veach, I'm making a phone call to Donovan Smith. I'm signing him for the league minimum and saying, why don't you come back with us? Why don't you help us win a Super Bowl and help us just shore up this offensive line?
I stand corrected. You're right. You're exactly right. That's a good call. I wish I had thought of that, and I think you're exactly right. Give that young man a call. See what you're going. Because, listen, it was a disaster.
Yeah.
There was at least three times that Patrick Mahomes could see the front numbers on the jersey, the front numbers on the jersey of the left tackle. And when that happens, that's never a good thing. If you can read his jersey numbers on the front, that's never good because somebody's gone by. So I think that's exactly right. I like the way you're thinking on that. I'm jealous of the fact that you thought it and thought of it and I didn't. Congratulations. But no, you're exactly right. Go get that guy signed. That's a must. Because after all, you know, not doing anything is not an option, because what could be the worst result of not replacing your left tackle? How about an injured Patrick Mahomes? How about that?
And it's always
how about that?
The Chiefs have played with fire in that regard for a while.
Oh, they have rolled the dice.
But credit to Mahomes over the years, even when he hasn't had a great left tackle, because he's been able to improvise. He's been able to. I mean, the guy is one of the, if not the slipperiest quarterbacks in the NFL. He can get out of anything and make things happen. But that's not ideal. That's not, especially when, you know, yeah, you might have added DeAndre Hopkins, but you don't have your full complement of receivers. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to have things, plays pan out the way that you drew them up as often as possible, not have to improvise, not have to scramble.
Right.
And a lot of that starts at the left tackle position.
And I'm going to give Patrick Mahomes a lot of credit for maturing in this area, because there was a day when he first started out, first couple years, you know, he gets pressure, he feels pressure, he pops, he goes, he runs, you know, he's on. And bad things can happen when you're on the run, as you know. Not good. A lot of good things can happen, but there's some bad things that can happen. And I'm talking physically. And I watched Patrick Mahomes, and I sat there. There were several plays. I sat there and I marveled at his control over his pocket, how he has mastered the pocket. And by the way, that's not a natural thing. You know what that is? That's hard work. There are drills that you do for moving in the pocket, forward, come back, sideways, right, left. You move back. You know, it's a skill. You learn it. It's not natural. But I'll tell you what, Patrick Mahomes' control over his pocket, there were several times he moved at least four times in different directions, forward, backwards, right, left. I mean, it was a thing of art. And if you're a high school coach and you want film on how you want your quarterback to move in the pocket, get some of that film of Patrick Mahomes. He has become a master. This wasn't him earlier in his career. His first thoughts were early in his career, pop out and let's go. But he is – did you notice how much he stayed in the pocket?
Well, yeah, and I think that that's, again, in an ideal situation, that's what you want to see from your quarterback. You know, obviously scramble when you have to and make something out of nothing. That's what he was able to do against the Niners a week ago was when he got out of the pocket and he scrambled, he tucked the ball and he ran and he got big yards and had a couple of viral moments by doing that when the passing game wasn't there for him. So, I mean, he can do it either way, either direction. But, again – I know it's Nick Bosa. I know it's Max Crosby.
Right.
I know those guys are elite pass rushers.
Right.
But from a and really you have to view this. Jacob and I have had this discussion multiple times about this team. You have to look at it through the lens of, is this team at a point right now with the personnel that they have to make a run through the postseason and win a Super Bowl? And I think obviously the answer is yes. They're 7-0. They're undefeated, right? But do you feel comfortable trotting out the starters that you've got in a Super Bowl? And I think by and large, again, yes, but I don't think left tackle, they're settled there. I don't think that they should be settled there just because of what we've seen, you know, for the last few weeks. And that was a concern going into this season. They didn't go out and sign a veteran. They didn't make an acquisition in free agency during the offseason. They were committed to rolling with the two guys that they've drafted recently at that position. Sua Mataia is a rookie, of course, started the season as the starter, and then Wanya Morris. Ultimately, right now at least, it hasn't worked. Could it work in the future? Sure. But it hasn't worked right now. I think that you need reinforcements at that position.
I agree 100%. And it's not just not the fact about winning football games and having success on the field. It's also concerning about because that is a position that can put your quarterback in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And you got to fix that. That's got to be fixed.
Yeah, and I think that, and I know that you brought this up just a few minutes ago, from a defensive perspective with this team, stopping the run, Chris Jones is a game wrecker and has been forever.
Yeah.
But what is Chris Jones best known for?
Sure, push.
Getting to the quarterback.
Yeah, push.
Pushing and getting to the quarterback.
Push, right? Push in the middle, yeah. Disrupts everything.
I mean, one of his nicknames is, what, the CEO of Sack Nation, right? Like, he is a get-to-the-quarterback kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's been really good stopping the run. That entire interior defensive line has been really good at getting the push and stopping the run. Mm-hmm. And that's become an identity for this team that I didn't see coming this season. And it's been consistent. It's not like a one-off or every couple of weeks. Every week, the Chiefs defensively have been able to slow down or all-out shut down what the lead backs want to do offensively from their opponents. And we're talking Alexander Mattison's not a great running back. He's who the Raiders have. But we're talking all the way from Alexander Mattison yesterday to Derrick Henry starting the season. They limited Derrick Henry. They limited Bijan Robinson. They've limited, you know, Alvin Kamara. They've limited the lead backs, the stars, for their opponents. And that's been something that I think is underrated defensively that the Chiefs have been able to do.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And you bring up Derrick Henry. It's going to be interesting to see. And there's the possibility that in the playoffs, there's a good possibility you'll have to face the Ravens. They're playing well. Lost a tough one yesterday, but, you know, and they've lost a couple of games that I'm really a little surprised they've lost. But Derrick Henry, my goodness, we were talking with our Raiders or with our Chiefs insider last week, if you remember, and I asked the question, is Derrick Henry the MVP? I don't know. I guess he's not going to be an MVP, but boy, I'll tell you what, he's an MVP with the Ravens, that's for sure. I mean, even though you've got Lamar Jackson, but boy, what has he meant to that football team? He has been something else, and he is. It's amazing they've lost the games they lost. I shake my head on that.
But, it is.
And I think to myself, how in the heck did that even happen?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, the Chiefs are doing a great job right now of stopping the and of course, it's always fun to see on those occasions, and they're not doing it all the time, but they're putting Chris Jones up at a wide five or a wide seven and bringing him off the edge.
Yeah.
No,
it's kind of out of position for him a little bit.
Yeah.
But that's not a consistent thing.
No,
that's happened from time to time.
They're doing it, seems like, a little more than they've been doing it. And that's one of those things where Chris Jones says, let me try it.
Sure.
Let me try it. And you want to know something? If you're the position coach of Chris Jones, you know what you say? Okay.
do what you want to do.
Okay.
As long as you can get to the quarterback. Yeah. So, and again, I think that this is a team that, despite its flaws, the deficiencies, the warts, everything that they've got, you know, you are what your record says that you are.
And there are some. There are some warts, yes. That's right. You're 7-0.
But you are what your record says you are.
But who doesn't at this point? We could sit and pick any team in the entire NFL, and we could say, well, here's what they need right now. If they wanted to be in the Super Bowl, we could do it with almost every team that's out there right now.
Yeah. And, you know, look, I think that because of all of that, that I was looking at their upcoming schedule. Of course, they've got the Bucs on Monday Night Football.
Bucs coming
a week
up
from tonight.
That's right.
In primetime. The Bucs are improved, but they're really injured and banged up at the wide receiver position. Mm-hmm. Chris Godwin is out for the year. All of that. That's been unfortunate for Tampa Bay because Baker Mayfield has had kind of that resurgence down there with the Bucs. They've got to turn that around. The Buccaneers do, and so of course they've got the Bucs, you know, in prime time. But it's not that long before the Chiefs go to Buffalo and they play a Bills team that has really come on strong in the last few weeks. The Bills absolutely dominated Seattle yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, and going back to Friday, our Friday football picks, I had the island because I was given the island, but I thought, yeah, there could be a chance that the Seahawks could hang with the Bills. Absolutely not. The Bills, from an offensive point of view, I think they've become, you know, probably one of the most, you know, explosive and dynamic, dangerous offenses in football.
I would have taken the island. You had a chance to take the island, and you took it.
I did.
And I didn't blame you for that because that game was in Seattle.
The Seahawks got blown out.
Blown out.
I mean, it wasn't like that was huge. That was, I mean, just massive. And I think it reestablishes the Bills, who I didn't have a whole lot of faith in at the beginning of the season, as one of the main contenders in the AFC yet again. Right. That goes back to the point that I made when you were asking about like the consistency about Mahomes. When you've got a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes or like Josh Allen.
Josh Allen would be one.
You don't necessarily have to rebuild. You retool. I thought the Bills were going into rebuild mode. I thought that it was going to take some time for them to rebuild up that offense around Josh Allen.
I see what you mean.
They didn't rebuild. They retooled.
Nope.
They retooled.
You're exactly right. Josh Allen is the key to that.
Yeah.
And you're just exactly right. Those are probably the two quarterbacks. Well, I guess you could throw Lamar Jackson. If I was going to say, if you wanted to, you know, take a quarterback, you know, but it all depends on what kind of football team you want to be. Do you want to be the kind with a dual option quarterback? I'm not crazy about that in the NFL. I'm happy with it in college football, but in the NFL, I worry every time I see Lamar Jackson take off with the football, which is quite often. I go, you know, I cringe a little, like, what's going to happen? But you know, you got that premier quarterback. A lot of good things happen.
It's true, and I think that the Chiefs have a pretty solid shot to enter that Buffalo game 9-0. It's a collision course in a couple of weeks for
that
game.
Real quick, before we go to break, who would you take, Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen, if you had a football team?
That's really difficult. Probably Lamar.
Still,
but man, you give Josh Allen some weapons. Bringing in Amari Cooper, game changer for him. It attracts a ton of attention. Good offensive line, but it let guys like Khalil Shakir eat and Keon Coleman eat. Like, it opened up opportunities for them. I don't know. That's a really, really tough question to ask. Honestly, both of those guys have, I think, reestablished themselves as the cream of the crop in the NFL. There's no doubt about that. We're going to keep the NFL conversation going. Take a look around the rest of the league. You mentioned the Ravens, Paul. They dropped to 5-3 after yesterday's game. They lose to the one-win Browns and Jameis Winston.
Right.
What in the world is up with that?
Yeah.
The Commanders and the Bears.
The Commanders. We got to talk about that.
We'll talk about that Hail Mary, the Cowboys and Niners in primetime. It was a big Sunday around the NFL. We'll get into all of that on the other side. Tommy Caster, Paul Savage, Jad Chambers, Sports Daily. Coming right back. This portion of Sports Daily brought to you by Crestview Country Club. It's fall time at Crestview. That means golfing still going on. Great golfing weather, although it's going to be warm and breezy today and the next day. But it looks like by this weekend, things should be calmed down and cooled off and should be a Nice weekend to get out there. Tennis events also going on at Crestview, like Glow in the Dark Triples as well. Of course, you can get all the information about becoming a member at Crestview Country Club online. Go to their website and find out more about what it looks like and what it would be like to have a membership there at Crestview. We really appreciate their partnership with us here on Sports Daily. Paul, let's continue to look around the NFL. We teased it before the break. A lot of really exciting games, a lot of surprising outcomes. We mentioned the outcome with the Ravens. We'll talk about that in a second. It's surprising, I think, that the one-win Patriots were able to take down the New York Jets. The Jets are, again, kind of in free fall a little bit just because of everything, all the drama, firing Robert Saleh and Aaron Rodgers and all of that. The Jets lose that game. But then some really exciting matchups like the Hail Mary with Jaden Daniels and the Commanders to take down the Bears. The Niners beat the Cowboys. What was your favorite game, favorite takeaway, favorite moment from yesterday's NFL slate?
Well, it wasn't the Chiefs. It was the command. Obviously, I guess we'll get to it right away.
Sure.
The Commanders and
the Bears.
The Bears.
Yeah.
Here you got the number one draft pick and the number two draft pick, and you and I were both in agreement that Jaden Daniels was going to be the better pick for quarterback. That's who you and I would
I like Jaden Daniels a lot coming out of the draft.
Not been a fan, I'm serious, I have not necessarily been a fan of Caleb Williams. Now, he may win me over, but remember, I watched him for an entire HBO Hard Knocks. He did not grow on me. He is not... I don't want to say anything that's bad, but
from a personality perspective, he's not warm and fuzzy like a lot of other quarterbacks.
No.
You know, and you don't have to be, right? That doesn't necessarily matter as much as your performance on the field. And you know what? Williams didn't have a great game yesterday. He has looked better, though, over the first, last couple weeks or so. He didn't start off the season particularly well. I feel like he's kind of settled in, but the Washington defense came to play and really, really limited him.
Yeah, and it was interesting to watch the 4 or 5 minutes, I guess, the game we saw the last. I wouldn't have seen this whole thing and gotten excited about it, except I got to see it live because that was the cutaway game after the other game.
Yeah, the Chiefs game. And Raven, or yeah. Raiders. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so anyway, it was really interesting to see what happened with the play. Turns out, and I'll get your thoughts on this. It turns out, which if you were watching it live, like I saw it live, because that was gone before the Chiefs started, I was going to watch the Chiefs, so here I'm watching the end of this game. Have no choice. It's already on the television, ready to go. And we see this Hail Mary, and it's successful. Turns out, Tommy, that one of the Chicago players, one of the DBs, was over about 20 feet, 30 feet away from where the action was, where all the receivers were gathered. Literally, for 7 seconds maybe, as the play was going on, the ball was snapped. This DB had his back turned to the game, and he was jawboning with a bunch of fans, gesturing and all this stuff, And then he turns around and he sees, wait a second, I've got receivers running right at me, and there's a game going on, and I missed it. And he runs right over to the pile where you throw the ball, where the grouping is, and then the ball pops up, and it turns out, his hand was the hand that tipped it to the receiver. Touchdown, Commanders, winner, Commanders. I mean, it was the darndest thing I've ever seen,
yeah.
Particularly with the jawboning going on, and not even know that the ball had been snapped. And it wasn't like he missed a second or two. He missed probably, 5, 7, 8 seconds of it?
Yeah, so that video went viral on social media after the game. Tyreek Stevenson is the player's name, the defensive back for the Bears. You've been a coach for a long time, Paul. Matt Eberflus, the head coach of the Chicago Bears, put yourself in his shoes for a second. Today's the day after the game. I'm sure the team shows up to the facility for team meetings. I know they traveled back home last night. Team meetings, looking at film, reviewing things, practicing, whatever. You're the head coach. What are you saying to Tyreek Stevenson? What are you saying to him in the moment after it's all said and done? But what are you saying to him today once you're reviewing the film?
Well, today is what we're going to talk about, if you want me to talk about that. First of all, I call him in my office and say, you're suspended for a game. That is unconscionable. This cannot happen. This is not Little League football. And what you did was horrific. Cost this team a football game. And so my first thing is I'm going to suspend him a week. What's he going to do about it? Nothing. He's going to take it. Hopefully like a man, and say, I get it. It was horrific. I'm also going to fine him. Now, I don't know how much he makes, but, you know, league minimum is, what, somewhere around $1 million? I don't know what he's going to make, but I'll guarantee you I'd find him enough that it'd be the entire game check. I don't know. And whatever that game was, I'm finding him whatever he made for that game. And I'm going to make an example. And because this is, you know, if the punishment isn't enough, then you're making a statement to the rest of your football team. Well, you can screw around and mess up, and it's okay. You know, we'll talk about it, and you can apologize, and we'll move on. No, that's not the way I'm doing it. Suspension, fine, and then go from there. And maybe he never recovers from it. If he takes it personally or whatever, who knows? But it was horrible to do. You think I'm being too?
No, I mean,
am I too heavy on it?
I don't. I mean, from a suspension perspective, I don't know. I don't think that that's realistic. I don't think that that's something that Matt Eberflus is going to do necessarily. I think what's probably
I know he probably won't do
it. I think what's probably more likely, and I don't even think this is going to happen, but what's probably more likely is you see the guy get cut, like you see him, they release him or whatever. I think that's probably more likely as opposed to a suspension, but I don't think either one of those things will ultimately end up happening. For me, what's unfortunate about that whole situation, and you know what, good for the Commanders, happy for them, Dan Quinn, and like getting some legitimacy back around this franchise, good for them. The bad thing about the Hail Mary, though, is it takes away overall from watching the number one and number two draft picks square off in a duel. We didn't know that they were going to actually get that because Jaden Daniels had been limited with those rib injuries that he had sustained
a week ago.
We didn't know he was going to play.
That's right.
And so, you know, really like that, I think that Jaden Daniels as a whole outplayed Caleb Williams. First time they've matched up doesn't mean that that'll be the way it is always, every single time, but at least in their very first matchup, that's what it was. I think that while the jury is still out long-term on Caleb Williams, and I know everybody's still optimistic about him, while the jury is still out, that it could have been really easy for Williams and the Bears to just pack up shop and go home. Like, they didn't play well at all for the first, what, three quarters of the game. They got back into it and took the lead, right? Like, and it was desperation time for the Commanders. There's a reason why, and I don't know, it's been probably, what, 30 years since we could say that the Bears and the Commanders, the, you know, Chicago and Washington, was actually a really high-profile matchup in the NFL. You can't take away from either one of these quarterbacks that they've led their respective teams to winning records through the first almost half of the season. And these are two franchises that have been down in the dumps forever. So long-term, who knows? Are they both playoff teams? It's going to be tough for the Bears. They're in a really, really difficult division. But they both are, they've got their teams playing better than what either one of these franchises have seen in a long time.
Well, the Commanders are going to be, will be a playoff team, I think. I mean, unless they fold
they
up.
They should be.
They should.
The
yeah,
Eagles
that's
are,
right.
you know, going to obviously stand in the way in the division.
Right.
I don't think the Cowboys are doing anything.
No,
and,
they're not.
So, we'll see. The Giants aren't doing anything. So I think the Commanders could absolutely win the division for sure.
Yeah.
And speaking of the playoffs, let's go to the AFC really quick, Paul.
All right.
The Ravens. They're 5-3. They lose to Jameis Winston and the Browns, who were 1-6 entering that game. Are the Ravens still legitimate contenders, or are you seeing some major issues with Baltimore?
I don't want to play them. If I'm an NFL team, I don't want to play them because I guess they could be beat. They've lost three games. They're not where I thought they would be. I thought they would probably be one loss. Two losses at the most, so maybe they're not as good as I think they are, so they can be beat. But the question is, do I want to play them? The answer is no. I don't want to play them. I think it's a dangerous team. Mm. The Ravens, they've got two guys that can run the football, Derrick Henry and, of course, Lamar Jackson. Both those guys can run the football. And Lamar Jackson, I don't think gets enough credit. Well, maybe he gets enough credit for being a good passer. He's really a good passer. So do I want to play that? No, I don't want to play him because I don't want to have to play a quarterback that's dual threat. That's tough. It's tough on you. I want my quarterback sitting right in the pocket where I know where he is. Then I can go get him. I can go get him if I know where he's sitting. So with that being said, I don't want to even at this very moment, 5-3, I don't want to play the Ravens. If I'm an NFL team, that's the one team I don't want to see.
You know, I think that a team that is built like that, where they're explosive. I used the phrase to compare the Chiefs and the Ravens last week. I kind of equated it to this, and tell me if you agree with this.
All right.
The way that the Chiefs are built, what their identity is right now, is they will kill you death by a thousand paper cuts. Like, it's little by little. It's nothing over the top or crazy, but then you turn around and holy crap, we're losing this game. How are we losing this game? Patrick Mahomes has thrown a bunch of interceptions and the Chiefs have turned the ball over and, you know, the drop pad, like all the penalties, all the different things. And then all of a sudden you turn around and like the Chiefs are 7-0. You're like, how in the hell did that happen? The Ravens, on the other hand, they're like a bazooka, right? Like you, yeah. They're explosive.
Right.
You know that they're going to come out and just like blow up. Right? That's kind of what they do, especially adding Derrick Henry into the mix. It's another explosive weapon. So it's different. Like these two teams, their identities are totally different because the Chiefs will kill you by giving you a bunch of paper cuts, and the Ravens are going to blow up an entire building to beat you.
Well, that's very well said, and you're exactly right. So I guess you pick your poison and everybody. But yeah. You know something? There's a number of teams in the NFL that when you look at defenses, there's some really good defenses. Right. I mean, the Chiefs aren't the only team that has a good defense. I mean, you know, I hate to say this because I'm not a Bears fan, but the Bears got a really good defense.
Right.
I mean, you know, notwithstanding, you know the Hail Mary and a cornerback who's sitting there not paying attention to what's going on. I mean, forget that. But I'm talking about they held Washington and a really good quarterback, Jalen Daniels, runs, who throws, who does it all, who's going to be one of the best, I think, in the league if he stays healthy and he has a good offensive line and some receivers. He's going to be a darn good one of the upper echelons. And they held him to what? Half a dozen or a dozen points, you know, or in that neighborhood.
Right.
Come on, for a whole game. So there are some really good defenses, and I always liked the good defensive teams. You know, you can always, if you can hold a team to zero, the worst that can happen is you tie.
Well, let me ask you this. I'll pose this question to you before we go to break and wrap up our talk on the NFL. There were a lot of teams that flexed yesterday across the NFL. The Chiefs are, though, the only undefeated team remaining in the National Football League. Who is the team right now that is the biggest threat, the biggest risk to the Chiefs not getting a three-peat when it's all said and done in February? And I'll give you a couple of options. You can pick any team.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be just these options.
All right, give me a couple.
Of course, we've talked about the Ravens. They lost, but they're explosive. The Bills hung a bunch of points on Seattle yesterday. The Lions put up 52 points in their game, bouncing back after their loss against the Vikings last week. There are some others out there. Who's your pick?
You named two that I would pick. The Lions, which you know I'm a fan of because of Dan Campbell. So I'd be the Lions and the Bills. The Bills, the way they played yesterday, that's a special team. They're going to have to be reckoned with. They have two losses already. But Tommy, let me tell you this. I don't want to play them if I'm Kansas City. I hope somebody takes them out before I have to play them.
Well, you know, and the Bills are... they're turning up right now, and the Chiefs are on a collision course with them in just a couple of weeks in Buffalo. Of course, Kansas City has Tampa Bay in primetime Monday night.
And by the way, somebody to take him out, I mean before we get to the playoffs.
Sure.
I don't mean regular season. You got to play him in the regular season. I don't want to play the Ravens or the Bills in the postseason.
Well, as long as the Chiefs can continue this death by a thousand paper cuts identity, hey, they're probably unstoppable because...
where'd you come up with that? Thousand cuts.
I don't know.
Not bad.
I don't know.
Not bad. Give you a little credit
that's
on that.
It's kind of what they do. It's kind of the way that they've played all season.
It?
And they make it work. And all of a sudden, their opponents are like, holy cow, we just lost.
Good
and
description, though. It is a good description.
So it is what it is, but Chiefs remain undefeated at 7-0. Before we take a break, let's set up our text contest. If you want to win some free HTO, all you have to do is text the keyword T, that's T-E-A, to code 20357. Each participant can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Speaking of HTO, you can get in there right now and take advantage of some of the great offers they have this fall season. But if you want to win some free iced tea from HTO, text the keyword TTEA to 20357. The World Series Game 3 gets going tonight. The Dodgers have a 2-0 lead. What's it going to take for them to go up 3-0 against the Yankees? We'll talk about that on the other side. Tommy Castor, Paul Savage, Sports Daily. It's coming right back. Welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily on this Reaction Monday. Every single morning here on Sports Daily, we get to enjoy delicious Prairie Fire coffee. I've got mine. Paul's got his. Always appreciated. And, you know, it's really one of the only things that gets me up in the morning, Paul. I know I get to come here. I get to enjoy some Great Prairie Fire coffee. So we absolutely appreciate their partnership here of the program and keeps us caffeinated, fueled up, and honestly allows me to continue on with my day once we're done with the show.
Well, there you go. It's fuel for the soul.
It is. So we appreciate Prairie Fire. Really quick, it's our final full segment before we wrap up the program today. And we've talked a lot of football, ton of football. You can go back and listen to all of it on the free Odyssey app, including our conversation with Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats in hour number one. Let's talk briefly baseball. The Fall Classic World Series currently underway. The Dodgers hold a 2-0 series lead. It's been just an exciting World Series so far. Game one ended with an extra innings walk-off grand slam from Freddie Freeman. That was incredible. And then game two, of course, the Dodgers were able to get the victory there. The Yankees threatened late in the game, but the Dodgers were able to close it out. The series now shifts, and the Dodgers have a 2-game lead. The only concern is that Shohei Ohtani dislocated his left shoulder on a slide into second base during game two. It does look like Shohei will play. Dave Roberts has said he'll play in game three tonight. But at this point, the Dodgers have a 2-0 series lead. For me, I mean, obviously, the ball is in their court. The backs are up against the wall for the Yankees. But the Dodgers, they can't take their foot off the gas.
No, they can't. And by the way, the difference in this series is obviously Aaron Judge, I think, at this point. He's in a slump, been in a slump. This slump is...
He usually is in the playoffs.
I guess we can't name him Mr. October,
no,
can we?
No, not yet. At least not yet in his career.
Reggie Jackson is still Mr. October, if I'm not mistaken. But with that being said, that's one of the big differences of the... And by the way, lots of strikeouts for Aaron Judge. I don't have it pulled up in front of me. But, you know, that's the difference in this game. And it just seems to me, and I could be crazy, but it just seems like to me the Dodgers have too many weapons. They got too much pitching right now for the Yankees. Right now it looks like I won't be surprised if this thing is swept in New York. It would not surprise
me. Wow. Okay, so it wouldn't shock you if the Dodgers win game three and game four?
Well, what about you?
I'll just tell you, if that happens, that would be the most disappointing into a season for the Yankees ever. With all the expectations and the hopes and how dominant they had been in the postseason, I mean, they looked more dangerous than the Dodgers did.
Well, I
going
know,
through the American
but
League.
But look at this. Look how the clutch players for the Yankees are playing here in the playoffs. Not well at all. That's the problem. But right now, by the way, something further with the injury to Ohtani. I saw this morning coming in. I heard it on another broadcast that Ohtani is not in near the pain that he was. It was not as bad, near as bad.
It sounded like a very minor.
It's what they said.
And I don't even think dislocation is the right word. It was a medical term like subluxation. I don't really know exactly what that means, but a very minor issue with his shoulder.
So,
and that's a major bullet dodged for the Dodgers.
It sure was.
Like that, I'm sure that the entire Dodger fan base held their breaths collectively as they saw Ohtani on the ground in pain like that.
Yeah, that's one of those things that, you know, can really affect in a career. I mean, all total. So that's good news. That makes the Dodgers even tougher for the Yankees. But I don't know. What do you think? Maybe the Yankees get a win or two?
I think the Yankees.
You think they get two wins?
I think that the Yankees, they're going to be in desperation mode, I would think that they would win tonight. Although the pitching matchup, I don't know if that really favors the Yankees or not. You've got Walker Buehler going for the Dodgers. Clark Schmidt is pitching for the Yankees. I think the biggest issue for the Yankees as the series goes on is that you've already pitched Gerrit Cole in game one, took a loss. Well, Cole didn't take a loss, but the Yankees lost. And then you've already pitched Rodon. And again, the Yankees took the loss there. So you've gotten through your top of the rotation, your two aces. That's going to make it more difficult. You would have loved to split in L.A. and have at least one of those top two guys be able to get a victory out of it, and that didn't happen. So that's going to be tough, and a tough thing to overcome, I think, for the Yankees. Although Vegas, they're leaning on New York in this game tonight. I mean, New York is a home favorite. The Dodgers are road dogs. I think that you've definitely got a situation here where the Yankees have got to pull out all the stops.
Well, and that's what, obviously, you got your back's against the wall, but that's why you get to come home and make a stand. By the way, an interesting article on ESPN.com right now regarding how many Hall of Famers are in this World Series?
Future Hall of Famers?
There's future a lot. Future Hall of Famers are in this series.
We talked about it the other day that, and I think this actually happened in game one, I'm pretty sure. But you have five former MVPs that are playing on both of these teams. That has never happened before in a World Series.
That just blows my mind.
Can you name them really quick? Do you know? We talked about it on Friday. I don't know if you can name them.
Judge Stanton. Freddie Freeman. Otani. And
Mookie Betts is number five.
There you go.
Five former MVPs in the World Series and has never happened before. There's been four, but that hasn't happened since 1971.
Yeah.
And that was the Orioles and the Pirates. Tells you how much history is happening in the World Series. Game three tonight in New York. We'll have all the reactions to it tomorrow on the program. We'll step aside for our final timeout. And on the other side, we'll tell you what's coming up on the network today. It's Sports Daily coming right back.